And welcome, everyone, to Your Money, Your Matters on Blog Talk Radio. I am Rick Grady, your host, and I'm certainly glad to be with you today, the day after Memorial Day, and certainly that is one of the reasons we're going into the program a little solemn this morning, and that is Shenandoah in the background, which was a song that was written about travel really on the Mississippi and the Missouri rivers, all the rivers on what was considered then the western frontier of the United States, but became very popular during the Civil War, and there was a significant amount of lives lost during the Civil War, and we will honor those today as we talk about your money and your matters, and also about the military, and really any other thing that you would like to talk about on today's show. So you can certainly give us a call at 646-929-1020. That is 646-929-1020. And if you would like to talk on the air, just press the number one key. That'll raise your digital paw. I'm monitoring the board, and I'll be able to bring you in so that you can talk on the air. I'm also monitoring the chat room, so if in case you don't want to talk on the air, but you want to register a question or you have an opinion, you can certainly do that on the chat room, and we'll be more than happy to read it off of there as well. So welcome, everyone, to the day really after Memorial Day, as we celebrated the 1.35 million Americans that had given the ultimate sacrifice for this country and made sure that it was peaceful and free, so that we can practice whatever religion, practice whatever thing, anything that we would like to do in this country without feeling any kind of retribution. And so that has certainly been the contribution that they have given to this nation, and we honored them yesterday in a very solemn ceremony that many of us attended. Hopefully you had an opportunity during the weekend to think about our men and women in the military and how they not only struggled during conflicts, but also even with from a monetary standpoint, they do struggle. Now, certainly, as I have mentioned in this program before, that being a former member of the military, I have been able to participate on the. I was just pointing. I'm sorry to Todd Mark, who just came into the show, because we didn't have our broadcast light on, and so he flipped that on for me, and that was I certainly appreciate that. But we've been talking a little bit about the military, and as a former member of the military, I can say that when you first start out in the military, this is not the place where you're going to go and make a fortune. And in fact, I will agree that a lot of things in the military are given to you. Certainly when you first start out in the military, you don't have to question housing and food, because that is going to be provided for you. Also clothing, that is going to be provided for you. So everything that you're going to get is going to be issued to you, but in addition, you're going to get paid. And there is some uniqueness to a lot of the pay grades. Certainly when you first start out in the military, on gross in a year, you're making $18,500 a year. That's your starting pay when you enter the military as an enlisted person, not an officer, but as an enlisted person. And if you're making $18,500 gross, which that's taxable, just because you're in the military does not mean that it's non-taxable. That $18,500 is taxable. So you'll end up with about, $12,000 in your savings account, hopefully, somewhere around there after you've paid your taxes. So, you know, a portion of it's going to go to Uncle Sam. You just figure that that's going to happen. And depending upon what state you're serving in, you may have some obligations there as well. Although military posts are military posts, they're considered federal ground, and so sometimes not subject to state income tax. But that varies from a case by case basis. So welcome, sir.
Welcome, and happy Memorial Day to you, as somebody who served in our military.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks to all of our listeners who've served to ensure our freedom always remains. So, anyway, you're dressed up.
Yes, I am. We have a city council meeting this evening, and I won't have enough time to go home and change. So,
I was going to say, I came in shorts. I said, for our listeners, we're going to grab lunch afterward. I said, gee, I didn't know how fancy of a place you wanted to go. Oops. So there you go. Wow, and by the way, your phones look like they're cloning week after week. You're up to four different phones here.
Well, I have three. The fourth one is an iPod, but yes, there is three from the standpoint that I get city calls, and so the city has issued me a phone so that under the Open Meetings Act here in the state of Texas and in the Freedom Act, so that you can get public records of public officials, and I am now a public official, the phone calls that I make for the city or I receive for the city or the emails have to be on a city-owned device.
Oh, wow.
And that way it separates it from my personal records, so if anybody in the Open Records Act decides that what they would like to do is take a look at what the council members have been doing, and they send in an official letter saying, I would like to see the records of the council members from this date to this date. That includes their telephone records. We have to provide them the telephone records, and that way it's very easily separated, and I'm not giving a list of also all my personal calls, which, you know, could very easily be misconstrued.
So if you'd like Rick's personal number for the city, just message me, Todd Mark, during the show after it all, and then you can send him inappropriate pictures or comments about the show. And
this always helps with a public official.
Yes, exactly. We'll have fun.
Of course,
with that.
Then there's these guys out in New York that snap pictures on their own and throw them up on Twitter, and you know.
There's that. So. So, and as always, for our listeners, if they want to join in on the call, 646-929-1020, 646-929-1020. So if you're listening to us live, here it is. It's, it's 11:08 Central Standard Time this beautiful Tuesday, the 26th of May.
It's
hard to believe.
It's hard to believe. It's hard to believe with all the rain that we've had. It's hard
to
believe.
Isn't it April showers bring Mayflowers?
Yeah, and
Mayflowers bring pilgrims.
and that's exactly correct.
Yeah.
And I think that the May rains right now have brought mold growing up my fireplace and the other brick areas on my home.
Well, first off, did you have a good Memorial Day?
Yeah, I did. I always celebrate Memorial Day fairly solemn. Mm-hmm. For all of the people that I know that I lost when I was overseas. And so I spend it pretty solemn, but we did have a very nice ceremony put on by the city last evening for about an hour and a half. Although it was raining, we still had the ceremony, and we actually spent the ceremony indoors. There was some talk of having it outdoors, but with all the rain that we've had, since it's in a park, we figured that everybody would just sink right down into the soil if we lose them.
So, you know, it's interesting. I know many retailers are open. Some retailers are closed on Memorial Day. What is your take on that?
I personally don't think it's a day to celebrate by selling mattresses, to be honest.
Seriously, so I can't tell you how many mattress ads I saw. Memorial Day blast!
I know.
Tempur-Pedic for $1,000.
Your final rest.
Yeah, I know. You know, what is it memorializing all the fun you had on the last bed. So
yeah.
Let's get a new one. So, but it's interesting, just who was open and who was closed.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I don't know why I think it's interesting. I mean, the fact that everybody has blown through Thanksgiving is a day that is a retailer day. Well, why should any other day be? But before long, I'm sure Christmas Day, everybody will be open that day too.
You know, and there are people that are now advertising on Christmas Day saying, hey, we're open. Sales have started. Come on out. So if you receive something early in the morning and you don't like it, that afternoon you can take it back and trade it in.
Now, what was funny is that I saw just as much publicity for one of our newest retailers up in our neck of the woods in Collin County is Nebraska Furniture Mart, and it was very obvious that they were closed on Memorial Day. And that says something from a corporate standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And what was really fascinating is it was their official grand opening. They've been open for a few months, but it was their grand opening weekend, and they closed right after their grand opening for Memorial Day, and then they said, but we're back open on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure some would say that's a catastrophic thing to do for a new retailer, and especially to take a day off, when an extra day. It's a big sales weekend for many. Some people do go shopping on the day off, but they took a different path, which I always think of Chick-fil-A, who has a corporate strategy of not being open on Sundays. And they out-earn many of the restaurants that are open 7 days a week, and they're only open six. So it shows that it's not necessarily catastrophic, that some people appreciate when you have a corporate mindset of being closed on certain days or holidays. So
I think that's one of Warren Buffett's little pushes or whatever you might call it. It's just his way of saying, there's certain days that I'm going to separate out as special days, and I don't care if everybody thinks it's a merchandise day or not. Nebraska Furniture will be closed on Memorial Day.
Yeah, and that's why both Cornerstone Credit Union League and Navicore Solutions, we never do the radio show on Sunday.
That's right. It's always on a Tuesday.
And
how many holidays are really on a Tuesday? Except maybe a couple of floating holidays here and there.
There you go. A couple of years ago, we had Christmas on a Tuesday.
That's right.
So we'll only be closed on Tuesdays, and we'll only be open on Tuesdays. So I also see not only do you look dapper, dressed to the nines, but that you've got a Children's Miracle Network bracelet on.
I do.
Are you doing stuff on behalf of Children's Miracle Network?
I am. This is a bracelet that you get to let people know that you've contributed to the Children's Miracle Network through their special Miracle Bands program. To let people know that they can go to mymiracleband.org and they can contribute to the Children's Miracle Network hospitals as well. So
I think I saw a few posts that you put up on Facebook over the weekend in support of that.
Yep,
so,
I did.
I read a story about a young individual who greatly benefited from the care that they received that way. So.
Yeah, it's it is my number one organization that I've been supporting for a long period of time, and certainly credit unions have been doing that through Credit Unions for Kids for a long period of time. In fact, it's now the fourth largest donator to Children's Miracle Network hospitals in the country. So for all of those that are not familiar with Children's Miracle Network hospitals, it is a nonprofit organization that raises funds for the children's hospitals in your location. So it's not raising funds which they're then transferring someplace else. Wherever the dollars come from, those dollars go back to the children's hospital in your local location.
Mm-hmm.
So it may not be, for example, let's take Dallas and Plano. If I contribute money in Plano, there is a branch of the Children's Health Medical Center in Plano, and the funds will go there.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm in Dallas County, the funds go to the Children's Miracle Network or the Children's Health Center in Dallas. So they separate it out and make sure that when the hospitals receive the funds, they know where the donors were so they can move the funds accordingly.
Wow. Well, that's just wonderful. And not just for our listeners, but for me as well. So Children's Miracle Network support, are the hospitals all under what name, or is it different hospitals?
Well, it's different hospitals. What it is that the hospital can elect to join the Children's Miracle Network, and if they elect to join the Children's Miracle Network, then they are in the funding group at that point in time, and they can receive funds from them. And it really kind of helps the hospital from the standpoint that the hospital doesn't have to spend a large amount of time fundraising. The hospital's got to have a lot of other things to do than sit around and fundraise, although they do.
Sure.
Because almost all of these hospitals are nonprofit, and because they are, they need donations and bequests and those types of things. And so they will go out and talk with corporations and people that are well-to-do and about donations, but they just don't always have the time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so this organization that was actually started by Marie Osmond and John Schneider out in Utah, who pooled their money together to begin the organization, has grown to include hospitals across the U.S. so that children's hospitals, they'll take the money and raise, actually they raise a great deal of money. I think the credit unions alone last year raised about $10.5 million for the children's hospitals across the U.S.
And again, pardon me for not knowing, but that's a good question to ask. So in Plano, where you live, mm-hmm. There's a children's hospital in Plano. Is that a member of? Or
yes.
So mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. anybody that uses the words children's hospital, are they part of?
They
or
may
part?
Or may not,
they
be,
may not be,
because yeah. you could have the Shriners Hospital, and it deals with children's cases, and mm-hmm. they are not, some of them are not. So, for example, the one here in Dallas is not. A member of the Children's Medical Network. Well, Children's Health is.
Okay.
And thus you see the connections with the balloons.
Well, I think I've shared in the past that when my son was 2 years old, he ended up having a significant surgery on his kidneys and his bladder and his ureters, and was in Children's Hospital in Atlanta for a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't have been more thankful for, forget the medical treatment itself and surgery, but just the care of every single staff person.
Mm-hmm.
And at a time when, as a parent, you realize how fragile life is, and you have every worst case scenario go through your mind, and you're praying for good outcomes, and there was so much love, care, and support. It's always something that I've thought when I'm in a different place in my life, I'd like to go back and
mm-hmm.
be able to support and contribute dollars and time as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that. I love that you've always been a supporter there.
Yeah, you know, and it started out early, and I'll relay a little bit of an additional story on top of that. When I first went to college, I decided I wanted to be a pediatrician. You know, I liked kids, and I thought, well, I'll be a pediatrician. I found out that I became too attached. And so, therefore, I really wouldn't have been a very good physician, to be candid, because physicians have to have that ability to separate themselves and look at something more clinically than any other way. And I became too attached and too involved and therefore a little bit too emotional to be what I would consider a solid, good pediatrician who could just make a call, you know,
uh-huh.
and just say, this is what we need to do. And so it wasn't the field for me. But when my daughter was born and she was 9 months old, she came down with an extremely serious virus that raised her body temperature rapidly. And I had to take her into the children's hospital. And at 9 months, they use some pretty tiny equipment. I mean, if you look at this stuff, to try to work with a patient that has tiny little arteries and veins, and they're trying to put in IVs, and you know, they needed to get some spinal fluid to make sure that it was not spinal bifida. What they determined it was a very terrible virus that had that she had contracted, and so she was on these drips for about 5 days that were just these super antibiotics to basically kill off anything that was going on. And, you know, to watch the type of care that they did at the Children's Hospital is kind of what pushed me right over the edge, that there's another way for me to take care of kids other than being a pediatrician.
Wow.
And so I started donating.
Huh. Now, Rick, it's funny. I don't know, we've never had this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I too wanted to be a pediatrician,
mm-hmm.
and when I went into college, I was pre-med. But unlike you, it was not an issue of becoming too attached to kids or the cases. I didn't realize that pediatricians had to be able to pass organic chemistry, so
that was
a barrier for me. Anyway, and that's a true story.
Yeah,
anyway, so there you go. Different strokes for different folks. But you know, it's funny. I think I've said this many times. It's why we do the show we do. We
mm-hmm.
care about helping people,
mm-hmm.
and you can help people many ways, not just from a health standpoint. I think we talk about financial health every week here
yeah.
on Your Money, Your Matters.
Yeah.
So by coming in a few minutes after the show, and pardon mm-hmm. the mist and the rain, of course, plays havoc as we come down
yep.
from Collin County
mm-hmm.
into Dallas, and on the construction right here in front of our beautiful cornerstone Credit Union League building here on LBJ. So I didn't want to interfere. You were talking about really budgeting for
budgeting for military. And I can remember when I first entered the military, and certainly you do this as a second lieutenant, or you do this as an enlisted private when you first come in. There's not going to be a lot of what they consider off post things for you to do. You're going to be on post. And so the billeting, basically housing you and feeding you and all of those types of things, are going to come from the military. And they don't charge you for that. In a way you're paying for it, but they don't charge you for that, and you're still earning a salary. So, in a way, if I was a private first class, you're probably earning about $22,000 a year, and hopefully you're living on post singly, and then you're above the poverty level. If you, and some of them aren't. Some of them get married, have a child, and they're immediately right at that poverty threshold, which is a lot of times why spouses work as well, just to supplement a lot of the costs. And because off-post costs are significantly expensive for military personnel. And one of the reasons that, to me it was a godsend, which was the post exchange or the base exchange, depending upon how big it was. So we call them PXs or BXs. But the post exchange or the base exchange was a godsend because the military buys things in such large quantities, significantly larger than Walmart. They don't mark them up to retail. They buy them at a significantly low wholesale price, and then they're able to put them into their stores at that price because the stores are part of the military base, and therefore they're covered under the military facilities. And so you can shop at a significantly reduced rate. And so that kind of helps offset a lot of the income that the military pays their other personnel. They don't pay them a lot. Although you have some of these benefits, and you might consider, well, those are fringe benefits, housing and food and everything else. But housing and food in Afghanistan is a little bit different than housing and food at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. So there's a big difference. But I think that what it really says is that the military, they're compensated. They're compensated okay. But there's a lot of people that take advantage of them, as we see around these posts. So if you go down, for example, here in Texas to Fort Hood, down in Killeen, Texas, and you if you drive around the post, it's a very big post, so it's going to take you a while to drive around it. But if you go to outside of each one of the gates, there's four gates, and you take a look at the atmosphere that is right outside of those gates. When they first walk outside of the gates, there is payday lenders and check cashers and title companies all over the place outside of the base. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they're not susceptible to it inside the base. Sometimes on the post may be a bank. There is a bank, a couple of banks that we do know. Headquarters, there's two of them in Texas and one in Oklahoma, that we do know that basically make a significant amount of their net income off of fees assessed to military personnel. If you dig down through that, you can see that one of their largest things that they will do, besides cashing a check for a military person, is they help them buy an automobile. And a lot of times, if you're a single individual and then you get deployed, for 6 months, that automobile is going to sit there for 6 months, but it'll only sit there for a couple of months because you might forget to pay the payment on your automobile, and so the financial institution will pop it and sell it at an auction, and then charge you for that. So you're not released from the loan at all. They are able to make additional income off of the income of selling the automobile, and they prey on them. And sometimes it's on post, and many times it's off post. And commanders usually look at on post stuff and go, you can't do that to my guys while we're on post. But there are a couple that still have locations on post, and they still do that. So they prey on some of the, I would say, mainly enlisted people or lower-ranked officers, lieutenants usually, new lieutenants, second lieutenants who are first in and are having to, and typically they'll buy a car. They've got maybe a college degree or they've gone through OCS or something, and they typically will buy an automobile, and then they'll get deployed. And now deployments are about 6 months. When I was deployed, it was 1 year. So you, when you left, you were gone for a year. Well, you can just imagine if you're in the middle of a quagmire in the South Delta region of Vietnam, you know, the first thing that when you wake up is not, gosh, I wonder if I made my automobile payment. And you may not have had put anything into place to automatically pay it. And you may not have had a even a bank account there or a credit union account to be able to automatically put your money in. In fact, when I was in, there was no such thing as an automatic payroll.
Wow. Hmm.
So you basically received cash or a check stub, and then you went and deposited it at some point in time.
Hmm. So one of the things you said early on, talking about the subsidized cost of consumer products and goods at the base exchange or post exchange, don't you think that sets up our military for failure when they exit out into civilian life, and you've used to budget for a bunch of bananas being 10 cents, not $1.50.
Yeah.
And you think you know what costs are, and you think, well, this is what I was able to live off of, and then they may go out and find a job that doesn't pay all that much more than they were making while in the military, but they're now covering their living expenses, they're paying rent, they've got a car payment, and then they go to a grocery store and there's absolute sticker shock. May obliterate their budget.
Yeah, I think that is correct. You know, fortunately, we've had some corporations step up, and I'll use the word Walmart, because they have stepped up just recently, and I can't remember exactly what the number was, but for some reason, $150,000 sticks in my head, in that they made a statement just recently that they are going to make sure that they employ another 150,000 military veterans in their stores, because what they found out is the military has a unique way of training people into loyalty and into working very hard. And it's, you know, kind of a thing that I remember last night when I was talking with a major general who is basically in charge of, the CEO that's in charge of the AAFES, which is the Army Air Force Exchange Service, I believe that's what it is, and they supply the materials to the PXs and the BXs. But when I was talking with him, Walmart has discovered something that a lot of corporations, like when I worked at EDS, that these are very loyal, hardworking individuals, and they hire them. So Walmart has found they did an experiment, and they hired, I can't remember how many it was. I think it was 25,000, and they monitored the work habits of all of their people, and they have found that the work habits of those 25,000 is significantly more than others. So they went to 150,000, which will be great because they'll be able to find out what the prices really are in a retail store. But I think you're correct. I think a lot of people that are in the military have a shock when they go out into civilian world. They try to find employment, and they're now, if they didn't spend a significant amount of time within the military or received certain awards. For example, if you received a Purple Heart, you can still, even if you only spent a year and a half or 2 years in the military, you can still shop at a PX. So there's certain levels that you've accomplished that will still allow you to shop at a PX. If you were in the military, and I'm trying to I don't believe it's 20 years, but I believe that it was 10, that if you were in for 10 years or more or achieved a certain rank and grade, that you can still shop at a PX, which is a significant benefit since, the, like I said, the prices are insanely low, let's put it that way. But I think that when you come out, you may not be prepared. I mean, financial education is something that's fairly new to the military. They are teaching it today, but they didn't used to teach it. I know that when I was in, they didn't teach it from the day that I entered. And when you left, they basically went through your record and said, oh, we owe you this amount of back pay, because they typically didn't send that pay overseas. We were paid in what you call script or military pay certificates. They were not U.S. dollars, although they said U.S. dollars on them. They were not the size of a dollar bill. They were not green and black. They were different colors, purples and reds and oranges and browns. But they were military pay script and, you know, backed by the military, who was more than willing to take that dollar as a dollar. But you didn't receive that much when you were overseas. Most of it you left behind. So you leave the service, they ended up cutting you a check or doling out actually real greenback to you in a big pile, and then they showed you the door. And you walked out the door with maybe a bus ticket home, and a little pile of cash, and, you know, a pat on the back for a job well done. That was it. So that's about how prepared you were for going out and finding a job.
Wow. It's fascinating. I've got several thoughts. It takes me back, though. Earlier this year, with my former employer, not with Navicor Solutions, but as a member of the National Foundation for Credit Counseling, there was an agreement with Coast Guard bases all across the country.
Yeah,
they would bring in a member of the NFCC to do a financial education. Why don't we just call it an outplacement? As people were exiting the service, what's the term there?
Being discharged.
Discharged. Yeah. they finish up. They finish up, and the military wants to make sure that they're exiting on the right foot. They're financially prepared. So it was such an honor. I got to fly into Houston for the day and working with at that Coast Guard base, and there's an Air Force base next to it as well. And the questions that came through were so poignant. I think they realize what sort of fragile nature their finances may be in as soon as they exit out. You know, many not knowing where their next job was coming from, or what a realistic cost of living was going to be. And it was fascinating. It's one of the things you wouldn't want them to pay full price while they're in the military, but by paying the super discount, you could talk about sticker shock, and they said, "Wow, we're not ready for that." So, if I think I can make it on $18,000 or $22,000, I can't really, because that's not the same by going to Walmart or Target or going to your mall, going to a grocery store. It's not going to be the same. So it's fascinating, and it's talking about resetting a new norm for costs for base living needs, and you know, helping figure out what are your costs for rent or for getting a mortgage, but your housing costs, your transportation costs, utilities, food, and again, so much of that, like you said, maybe outside of transportation, that was all covered while they're in the military. So you're facing this all at once. It's much like age of acquisition for 18-year-olds, but it's different. You think of an 18-year-old that moves out from mom and dad. They have no prior experience, and they learn school of hard knocks, but they learn very quickly the cost of things. It's different if you enter the military and you establish a norm, and then you realize once you exit that norm isn't real. It's not based for civilian life. So I would think that would be a harder transition.
Yeah. Now, I think that, you know, it is a harder transition. I think that obviously you haven't spent months while you were in the military putting together a resume and sending your resume out to employers.
Yeah.
And so you aren't prepared for that time gap that's going to take place.
Mm-hmm.
And people need to be prepared when they're in the military to realize that when I walk out that door, I'm not employed by the United States military anymore. And so for a period of time, I'm going to have to live on what I have until I find a real job. I think that. It's much better now, or getting better now. I think that there's some outplacement services that the military is doing, realizing that this does take place, so they're taking care of their own. They're doing a lot more financial education now than they used to do in the past because they're taking care of their own.
Yeah.
And they're realizing that even as a second lieutenant, you're brand new to the officer corps and everything else, you're probably earning somewhere around $35,000 a year, which, that's not bad, but still $35,000 a year is $35,000 a year. It's a little bit on the low end when it comes to possibly you and maybe a significant other living off post now, and many of them don't live on post. Many of them will live off post. And those apartments, they're $1,000 a month. So all of a sudden, $12,000 of your net goes away. That's about half of your net has gone into housing, much less the automobile that you're going to drive to get back on post. So all of a sudden, a significant amount of your income has gone away. And even though you're buying things at the PX, if you leave the military at that point in time, you still got the automobile payment, you still have the $1,000 a month, you still have the utilities, but now you're buying from a grocery store.
Rick, let me ask you, what do you think the average impression is from a corporate side, from most employers, if they're looking at somebody with military experience? Some corporations I know stay with great pride in how they mm-hmm. purposefully go after hiring some of our veterans. But the reason I'm asking this, you say, where are you going with this time? I know that another issue for our militaries are they're coming back and reengaging in civilian life is job placement and mm-hmm. their skills. Some community colleges will take your military experience and transfer that literally into transferable credit, toward a diploma or a degree, because you could say, well, I served in the military. Well, what does that mean when it comes to education? It doesn't mm-hmm. it doesn't necessarily compute for many. Some will value that, some may not. At the same time, from a getting a job, from applying and resume writing,
mm-hmm.
I remember doing a class and somebody said, well, here's my resume. And their resume was their military experience. And on their resume, it said 57 kills. Now guess what? This is probably a great accomplishment mm-hmm. from a and if they were deployed, let's say they're in Desert Storm or they're, mm-hmm. They're in Afghanistan, they were chasing weapons of mass destruction, that was an accomplishment and, mm-hmm. and part of their duty or their objectives. But going to a credit union to look for work and
yeah.
say, well, let's talk about your customer service skills. Well, I've got 57 kills.
Yeah.
Okay. And again, it's kind of a disconnect. Well,
yeah.
how do you say, what does that translate into? Well, I have leadership skills or
mm-hmm.
team building skills and communication and, you talk about dedication, but it wasn't transferring out onto a resume or how they show that in an interview.
Mm-hmm.
And it just made me wonder, as a former military yourself, how well prepared or what we need to do to help our vets get jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's a very valid question. I think that there's more help that needs to be done. Which is why I continue to be a proponent of it. But when I look at it from the military standpoint and I look at the officer ranks and the enlisted men ranks, first you have to realize that really there's only about 1.6, 1.7 million active duty military members at this time. So it's about a half of 1% of the entire population in the United States are really active duty military. Most of the turnover in the military will be from your enlisted ranks. Those are the people that will come in, spend some time, and leave. We certainly know that a few of them decide to stay on in the enlisted ranks and work their way through the enlisted ranks, and then you see the guys that have the, you know, the upside down chevrons going down their sleeve for a long period of time. They've been in a long time, and I remember last night, as a matter of fact, I was talking with a captain in the Navy who was at the ceremony. A captain in the Navy is the equivalent rank of a colonel in the other military. We were just chatting about a couple of things, and he said, "Are my buttons straight?" And I said, "Yeah, your buttons are straight. Why do you ask?" And he said, "Because there's a command sergeant major on the inside of this hall that we're going to go in, and I know he's going to give me a lot of flack if they're not straight." And that's just the way it was. I mean, here's a colonel who's afraid of the command sergeant major, and that's the way it was when I was in the military too. That higher ranked enlisted men that had right side and upside down chevrons on their sleeve with maybe something in the center of it, like a first sergeant, these were people that even captains would cowl from, because they've been in the military for a long time and they know every in and out of it. So they respect them almost as if they're a commanding officer. And a lot of times the big duties go to those guys. But that being said, a lot of the enlisted men are the ones that roll over and leave the service, and some of the lower rank officers will, as if they don't get promoted. Obviously, there's as you go in the military, there's as you get promoted from one rank to another, there's only so many majors in the military. There's only so many lieutenant colonels, so many general spots. And so if you are a full bird colonel and you would like to get your first star as a brigadier general, you and probably another couple hundred colonels would like to have that star, and there may be only one. So you're all fighting over that one position. If you don't make it in three times of trying to earn that rank, if you don't make it three times, you're basically out of the service at that point in time. And so that you just, you know, you're not going to make the rank. And in a lot of the lower officer ranks, and in some of the enlisted ranks as well, if you're up for promotion and you don't make promotion three times, you're out. And so what you have given your life to in the military, all of a sudden you are out in the civilian ranks. And being out in the civilian ranks may be a surprise, as you mentioned. There are certainly in an officer rank, there are many more skills that you could probably put on a sheet of paper that says, these are the things that I have great leadership skills and I've learned all of these things. Maybe it's in supply, or maybe it's various other, they're not all infantry. But in the enlisted ranks, in the lower enlisted ranks, there may not be. Other than, I would say that once you're looking at somebody who is a corporal, two-striper, a sergeant, three-striper, once you're seeing, those are people that are in leadership positions at that point in time. They are in charge of platoons, or are they in charge of companies? And they may have anywhere between 10 to 12 people in their platoon, and anywhere between 60 and 120 in their company. And they are leading that company at that point in time, and the officers are relying on them to lead those guys. So when the officers will give commands, they will give commands through the platoon sergeants or the company sergeants and down into the platoons, and the platoons will then carry it out. And those platoons will have a leadership role to make sure that if they left with 10 guys, they come back with 10 guys. Mm-hmm. And so it's a real huge responsibility to make sure your guys are well-trained, they're well-equipped, and they know their job and what they're supposed to do. So that is what I think they need to put on their resume. I think those are the important qualities to put on the resume, not, you know, I was out in the firing line, I was able to notch my rifle 57 times. Right. You know, unless you are a security guard for diplomats overseas, nobody probably cares, to be candid.
No, not care. It may scare them.
Yeah.
Or just say, what, you know. I wouldn't want to bring in somebody with a criminal record.
Well, I hate to get this guy mad.
But they've served. they did this legally and in their duty, but it's still kind of scary.
So, very interesting.
What are some of the other things that you think that we should do for our military and helping them get reengaged for toward financial success?
Well, you know, I think that sometimes I think that financial institutions, credit unions have stepped forward, especially our military credit unions have stepped forward and worked with the post commanders and worked with the base commanders and found the financial officer or the paymaster, depending upon how big of a post it is, and worked with them into financial education and trying to teach them, here is a bridge to get from where you are to where you want to be. And that bridge is there, whether you're in the military and you're continuing to serve in the military or you're deciding that you're going to rotate out and you're going to depart the military and now you're going to go into civilian life. You need a bridge to get across there so that you understand when you get on the other side what you're going to be facing. And so what I've seen with a lot of the military credit unions is they go in with that kind of military mindset, that here's the activity you're going to see on the other side of this bridge. This is what you're going to be facing when you get over there, and these are the things that you're going to need to do. You have to budget a whole lot better than you've been budgeting before because you just can't just spend it. And there are certain things that you're going to be facing that you need to pay attention to, and they will help them write a resume, and they will help them apply for jobs and find secure employment wherever they may be, whether it's there or whether it's in their hometown. You know, a lot of them will go back home. And so I think that I know when I left, you know, and this was, you know, many moons ago back in the 70s, and I left the military, I was in the Oakland Army Terminal is where they brought everybody through. That's where they did all of the processing from anybody coming from the Far East. And I was given a bus ticket to go home from Oakland back to Madison, Wisconsin, which is a heck of a bus ride. The cash that I was left with and a duffel bag of basically uniforms and any civilian clothes that I might have bought. But when I got home, I really didn't have anything. And this was the void that took place, that there was nothing that said, this is what you're now going to be facing. You're going to need transportation. You're going to need housing. So I went back home. I stayed with my parents for a period of time until my father came to me one day and said, Rick, you need to find a job. And I said, yeah, you're right. I probably do need to find a job, but here's the question. How do I do that? And so he helped me. He basically sat down and said, okay, let's talk about it. Let's figure out where you want to go and what you want to do and what the skill sets are and everything else. So it was my dad that basically did that stuff for me. My family did that for me. And some people may have that opportunity, and many people don't have that opportunity. So I think that's the big leap that credit unions and a lot of other people, there are others that have volunteered to go on base and help these people transition out of the military and get used to crossing the bridge and getting to the other side and anticipating what's going to take place and preparing them.
Wow. Like I said, as my role as a member of the National Foundation for Credit Counseling, it was so gratifying to do, and I hope if we have any military folks that are listening and they think we need to bring financial education, you should reach out to me, reach out to Rick, and say, how can we collaborate between Cornerstone Credit Union League and NAPCOR Solutions to bring that to your base, or if it's to a veterans group, you know, there's right here in Dallas, there's so many groups, and there's nonprofits that are focused on veteran success.
Mm-hmm.
And saying how can we put on the programming to help them be successful today? So,
Yeah, and some of it, you know, interestingly enough, and you're talking about people that are able to manage things. I belong to the VFW and I belong to the American Legion. I belong to a couple of other military organizations as well, and I do that for one reason. and that is to receive a significant amount of information from all of these organizations as to what's happening in Washington, D.C., and what the decisions that are being made by our congressmen as far as military benefits, veteran benefits, those types of things, so that I can help lobby for those things that would be good. One of the interesting things, however, that I found was there's a couple of VFW posts, one in my hometown, Plano, that is not doing very well. And I sit there and wonder periodically, have they I understand that they would like to have a gathering place for the veterans, so that the veterans that belong to that chapter can go and reminisce and help each other out and everything else. But they, too, have probably selected billeting, if I can use that word, that is more expensive than they can afford. Mm-hmm. And so they have to make some decisions as to what they need to do next. And it doesn't end there. These are senior military, or not senior military personnel, but they are senior people who were in the military. But they are trying to run an organization, and they're not running the and this is no slam on them at all. They are running the organization in a way that I think they need some help in budgeting. How much money are they coming in, and what can they afford, and when can they afford it? And I think they're wrestling with that decision right now as to what are they going to do. It's probably no fault of their own, to be candid. They had a very good place for a long period of time and got accustomed to it. It was supplemented by an individual that was in the military who owned the retail establishments, mm-hmm. And that person passed away, and all that stuff went away. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden they were faced with things that they had never been faced with before through that supplemental income that they were receiving. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my heart goes out to them, and I hope we can help them out from an organizational standpoint to get on their feet and be mm-hmm. able to afford it. But basically they... You know, they had their housing removed in a short order of time, and they had to find a new place to be.
Hmm. Wow. Well, it's interesting when we think about Memorial Day and thanking those that have made sacrifices. Well, I think everybody should have an ability to be financially successful, to provide for their own base needs, their base living needs, and but for those that have given way beyond a normal job, that we should do whatever we can to help and assist them and continue to push them in the right direction so that they can they are self-sustaining, so they're sustainable, and they're successful. They're not taken advantage of. They're not taken advantage of by some of these shyster financial institutional lobbies.
Yeah.
And we need to continue to lobby against the fact that those are illegal options that surround these bases like sharks around
blood.
Boy,
they do. Oof.
It sickens me. But making sure that we're also protecting the benefits that somebody entered the military thinking this is exactly what I thought I would have during the course of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And to think that the downward pressure from federal deficits could say, well, we could save this much money by making this trim on this benefit or this expense. It's not acting in good faith.
Yeah, and I look at it. I mean, I see it quite a bit. I think all taxpayers see it. There are taxpayers that wished we didn't spend as much money as we spend on the defense of this nation. I would put it to them: what is it worth to you to defend this nation?
Mm-hmm.
And if your decision is that we're not going to spend that type of money, you're basically giving up the security of the country in order to save a few dollars in your own pocket. And that's really what's taking place. I see it trimming back more and more and more all of the time, and it places some things like the United States vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you look at the half of 1% that are now serving on the front line, Those are the individuals that are in uniform today. A million and a half people are protecting 360 million some odd individuals here in the United States in various locations. And then if you looked at the entire population of the United States, how many of those actually served in the military? It's less than 10% has actually served in the military that are veterans. I think what you might want to conclude is maybe the safety and security of our country is significantly more important than I get to put a few more dollars in my pocket. Now, that's me, and not everybody thinks that way, I understand. But, you know, when I look at it from a city standpoint, what's the one thing that people do when they decide to buy a home in a neighborhood? And the first questions out of their mouth is, how safe and secure is the neighborhood? Mm-hmm. It's the first questions they have to a realtor is, how safe and secure is the neighborhood? How safe and secure is the city? Mm-hmm. And so they want that. But it's costly. It's expensive. And you look at it even from a city budgetary standpoint, mm-hmm. a significant portion of the budget for the city of Plano goes to fire and police to keep the citizens safe and secure.
Which is one of the key amenities, the mm-hmm. key service deliverables that any community you want to live in, that needs to be an invested part of the infrastructure.
I
was with somebody on Sunday, and they were talking about they had moved from Oak Cliff up into Prosper, which is
that's a heck of a move.
But a very different existence, mm-hmm. and they talked about just what they take for granted nowadays, living in Prosper, which they never could before, which was going a night without hearing gunshots in their neighborhood.
That'd be nice.
The ability to walk down your streets and not worry for your safety. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that there was not investments in fire and police there. It just means there's some places where it works out, and there's other mm-hmm. places that crime is a big issue. If you don't have deterrence and you don't have the people that are willing to do the work to protect you, it's a big problem,
mm-hmm.
and it completely diminishes any value of living there, but your whole existence. So anyway, you're right. And as a member of the city council there in Plano, always protect the investment in our fire, our police, our emergency services, mm-hmm. Our first line of defense.
It's one of the first things that I was asked.
Yes,
in fact.
So there you go. So well. Well, I'm glad you had a good Memorial Day. Hopefully for all of our listeners, especially those who we want to salute and thank you for your service for former military. Mm-hmm. We hope it was good for everyone. And, next week as we enter into June, we'll be talking about Home Ownership Month. And maybe each week we can do a different topic, whether it's buying a home or renting an apartment or talking about avoiding foreclosure or talking about selling homes, even reverse mortgages.
We can
focus on housing issues in June, but lots of good things as we pass through another month.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks everyone for joining us on Your Money, Your Matters, and certainly for Todd, Mark, and myself, and all of the others that are probably absent without leave today that normally join us. We certainly wish you great success in your future. And certainly in your savings account and your finances. So for Your Money, Your Matters on Blog Talk Radio, have a great Tuesday, and we will talk to you in 1 week.